Mother Earth is psychedelic. Her body is covered with psychoactive, sacred medicine. Can psychedelics help us become more conscious and loving parents, partners, lovers, and leaders? Welcome to the Psychedelic Mom Podcast. I'm your host, Michaela Carlin, the Psychedelic Mom, a mother and entrepreneur partnering with Mother Earth's sacred plant medicines to heal, awaken, and learn to live in alignment to my truth. Psychedelic literally means soul revealing. What reveals the soul to oneself is psychedelic. I invite you to join me in deep conversations with leaders, healers, seekers, and other parents. I will share my journey, the wisdom, practices, medicines, and mistakes that have changed my life, and personal stories of others on this wild path. We are the medicine needed to birth the more beautiful world we know is possible.
Hi, Jeremy. It is so good to see you today. And I'm so excited to have you on this podcast and talk about all the things that you're bringing into the world.
Hey, Michaela. It's so good to be here. It feels like it's been a long time coming.
So where are you in the world?
Yeah, I'm near Boulder, Colorado, in a town called Lafayette, where I've been living since April.
So Jeremy is a psychedelic integration specialist and also a musician. And I was lucky enough to work with Jeremy for my intro and outro to the Psychedelic Mom podcast. So I wanted to bring Jeremy on and really explore how psychedelics have influenced his life, his music, and his work. Jeremy, would you actually start this episode off with sharing one of or a really profound medicine journey that you've had that impacted your life? What medicine, maybe what your intentions were going in, the experience, and what you learned from it?
Absolutely. I would love to share. What's coming to me is one of my initial experiences, which ended up being really, really profound one. I've been a musician. I lived in Pittsburgh for 11 years. I grew up in that area. I often say that I'm really grateful I grew up in that area. I really love that area. I love that city. This is true everywhere, but there feels like there's a lot of karma. There's a lot of density in that area. For better or for worse, and for me, it's been a true gift on this path of earth medicines. But in my maybe lesser awake state, I was a musician that was playing a lot in Pittsburgh and in a lot of bars, a lot of alcohol, all the time. And I was in a really awesome folk rock band, and I called ourselves a brewery band. So one of my buddies at the time had rented this cabin during this time where I was really very much into music and into this, but something was starting to shift. This was late 2014. And we're sitting around the fire and people had been drinking, and I maybe had a couple beers, and my buddy and his friend had just got back from Peru a couple months ago. And they start telling me about their experience with this thing called ayahuasca. And I'm like, what is ayahuasca? And then of course they start to go into their stories of ayahuasca, and everyone tells their stories of their experiences on ayahuasca. As a caveat to this, you know, one of the most important things that I experienced before going into ayahuasca was someone telling me to not really listen to other people's stories and not take them as any sort of expectation, because everyone's experience is so different. But regardless, this one friend in particular was telling me something like, and then ayahuasca took the form of a serpent and started wrapping herself around me. And as she got up to my face, she looked right into my eyes and was peering into my soul. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? Like, this sounds really crazy, but I'm actually kind of into it. And so he then goes on to tell me about the molecule that is active in ayahuasca, which is DMT. And then he goes on to tell me that there's a form of it that you can smoke, that I now know as NN-DMT. And after this conversation kind of wraps up, he decides, seemingly spontaneously, he's going to smoke DMT that night. and he is inviting anyone to join him. And I am like, wait, whoa, what? You just said this was going to happen and we've all been drinking. And I'm like, I don't know, man. So he does, he goes into the cabin and he takes, I think, himself and two people on a DMT journey. And I just see them kind of take the hit, lie down on the couch, 10 minutes go by and they come out and they're just like in this afterglow and they're just very like calm and just could tell something happened, but there wasn't a whole lot that was spoken about it. And the next morning I decided that maybe today, like when I'm free and clear. So I got myself, I stretched, I did yoga, I ran, I started reading Siddhartha. And I was like sitting in the hot tub with my buddy and I looked at him and I said, I think I'm ready to try it today. So his girlfriend, his dog, and myself went into the woods and I brought my sound bowl because I at least was conscious enough to know, like, I want some kind of anchoring. And I taught his girlfriend how to administer the sound bowl. He had a vaporizer pipe. He loaded it up, pretty hefty dose. And he essentially told me to take a big hit and hold it in as long as possible. So I took the biggest hit of DMT of my life and lied down and put something over my eyes. And as soon as I did that, and I'm going to kind of like do the exact same thing that I just said that people do.
That's right.
So disclaimer, this doesn't exactly happen for everyone, but similar things are reported. And I tell you, instantaneously, it's just black and in the middle appears this perfect multi-sided geometric shape. Absolutely symmetrical. If I had to guess, it had at least 12 sides to it and all sort of interconnected. It was like a whitish silver lining. And I am just enamored with this. And then all of a sudden, all of the lines just like start to morph and just shift and it turns into this serpent.
Oh boy.
And the serpent starts kind of slowly coming toward me. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't afraid. There wasn't any fear. And I'd remembered that someone had told me that the best thing to do is to let go. So in that moment, I reminded myself, let go. You know, a lot of people talk about like being shot through a tunnel and blasted off. For me, it felt like I fell. It felt like I just fell instantaneously into a different dimension. And I was apparently out for, you know, a solid almost 10 minutes. But what I do remember, and I don't remember the full scope of this experience, but what I do remember was being on this really playful plane and seeing very, very odd things. It's hard to describe. But what I do remember is that I saw something that looked like a giant pill-shaped cross section. So if it was like split down from the top, and inside of it, it almost looked like a cell is what it looked like. When I looked into it, it had all of these morphing moving parts. And then it felt like there was this narration, but there were no words. And then it zoomed me in. So it completely zoomed me in to like the cellular level of this thing that I'm describing as a cell and seeing like the interworking parts. And then it would zoom me out. And then I remember I would move my consciousness from like the right side to the left side. And what was on the right side moved over to the left side and it was there and it completely morphed into something different. And same thing, it zoomed me in to what I assumed was the cellular level and zoomed me back out. And without any words, without any narration, the overarching message was everything is connected in every impossible direction. When I remember starting to come back, I remember breathing and then taking this cloth off of my eyes and looking at my buddy's girlfriend who is still doing the sound bowl. And I tell you, I was still very much in the medicine. And she looked thicker, like everything looked thicker. The colors were very, very different, a whole different spectrum of colors I never experienced. She had this symbol in her forehead, this reddish symbol that was occurring. And I looked above and beyond her, and each leaf was in this beautiful yellow geometric pattern perfect. And each of the yellow leaves were arranged in a perfect geometric pattern, like a dozen of them. And it was just like this key of leaf geometry in the sky. And my initial thought was, shit, I took this thing from my friends who are actually aliens and they kidnapped me to a different dimension.
And now I'm here forever.
I'm here forever. And I look at my friend and he's the same thing. He's thick. He's got the symbol on his forehead. And his dog was the same thing. It was just like, and his dog is, his name is Anubis. And it's this greyhound. And it was like very much like it's Egyptian theme. Mm-hmm. So then my next thought was, oh, I'm just dreaming. I do a lot of dream work. I'm like, maybe I'm a lucid dream right now. And I thought about flying. So I actually looked up to the tree next to me and I'm like, well, if I can't fly, I can at least like crawl up this tree really quick, like a squirrel. And I thought about doing that for a second because in lucid dreams, that's what you do. You take control and you do something fantastic. Luckily I didn't. Luckily I had enough sense to just kind of sit down. And I looked at my buddy. I looked him in the eye and I said, what was that? And I pointed behind me to the ground where I was laying. And I looked back and I'm like, it all just hit me. It was like, I left my body. I absolutely left my body. I essentially had a question answered that I had been asking for quite some time, which was, does consciousness exist beyond the body? And so it was a profound experience. It was beautiful in a lot of ways. I'm glad I did it in nature. I'm glad I did it pretty intentionally, but I kind of haphazardly fell into a very, very deep initiation. It took me 6 months, I would say, to feel grounded. Mm-hmm. I would say I thought about that experience every day for the next 6 months in a kind of a confused fashion. And there was no talk of integration at that time in my life. I didn't know what that was.
So it was profound and at the same time, a little untethering at a time when there wasn't psychedelic integration. There weren't even these conversations really being had about the importance of set and setting intention. Luckily, you were safe. You were with friends. But yeah, I talked to someone recently who's a therapist who works with a lot of clients later on that have these profound spiritual experiences with psychedelics or in earth medicine, and then don't have the container or deep understanding of different faith traditions and what they might be accessing. And even to have the idea, like you already was questioning, does consciousness live outside my body? You were already into sound baths and deep meditation, so you probably had already experienced some forms of non-duality and altered states. But even with all that, DMT, NNDMT, took you to a place that was further and harder to actually understand from the conscious mind.
100%. It was incomprehensible. And I was left to my own devices. I did have my friend, but he was kind of like a, yeah, you'll figure it out kind of mindset.
And how did you figure it out?
Well, it's funny you say that because I ended up calling a friend of mine who I went to college with, and I knew that she was into the medicine work scene. And I spoke with her for probably 2 hours on the phone, and I described my experience. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I was doing integration. I was doing integration support work. I was receiving it. And it was really beautiful. And one of the main things that we spoke about was shadows, like shadow work, because maybe this had stirred up a lot. It was actually like the next day, like I received a message after this experience. I received a message from my partner at the time saying that we should transition into being friends. Everything just started shifting. And so shadow work was apparently on the radar. And one of the things we spoke about in that conversation was seeing our shadow in the light. How do we dissipate the shadow? We cast our light upon it. We observe it. We commune with it. We look at it. And I got off that phone call and I sat down, opened up my journal and just started writing. And the first thing I wrote was, see your shadow in the brightest of light. And it just went on. Shine your way through the darkest of night. Mm. Let fear surround you, inspire you to move, and bless it as you exit to an infinite room. And I kept going, and there's this whole poem that I wrote. And this infinite room, though, it was the experience that I had. I was in this infinite, this plane where everything was connected. And so I went on to write this poem as integration. And once again, I was just doing it because that's I'm a creative, I'm a musician, I'm a lyricist. That's just my, you know, how I express. And I finished this poem and I read through it. I'm like, this is really beautiful. I'm like, but it needs a melody. Mm-hmm. So I started to sing. And I sang this a cappella version that kind of felt to me kind of like a Celtic style, just essence about it. All in that moment, right after that phone call, all through integration that I didn't even know I was doing, created this poem that became this song that became named As Above, So Below.
Whoa. So my music for my intro is this piece, As Above, So Below. So this is fascinating for me to hear how this song was birthed from psychedelics. And now you're on the Psychedelic Mom podcast talking about this song, As Above, So Below. And it's interesting because when I was looking for a musician for my intro, my producer mentioned you, and I was going through just your different tracks and your titles, and As Above, So Below was something that just the phrase alone was so important to me, because like I had said to you, for about a year, I was falling asleep at night to listening to the Kabbalah, which is from the Hermetic texts. And one of the seven principles is so within, so without. And that was while I was listening, you came into my life. That's such a profound story. And what I love about this is you had this profound experience, and then you found this kind of gap of like not having integration available to you, but you did find somebody who spoke, kind of talked to you about this. But then your own intuitive soul found ways to integrate this process through your song, through your music. How would you say that psychedelics in general have affected your path?
I typically, when I refer to that particular medicine, mm-hmm. as NNDMT or 5-MeO, I call it the page turner. Yeah, I use that phrase to show the scope of how it affected my life. And that was just one experience. It was like a whole new chapter of my life started in that moment. On this path, it tends to unfold in ways that are, is this kind of the phrase, like it's already been written. These foldings are just like laying dormant, waiting to just be opened up in a way. So NNDMT led me to mushrooms. And during my first deeper dive on mushrooms, I was toying with the idea of saying yes to going to Peru to work with ayahuasca. And so the mushrooms very, very clearly told me, yes, you're going. You're going to the jungle. You're already there. So I said yes to that. And then shortly thereafter, within 5 months of that experience, 5 or 6 months, I was in Pucallpa, Peru, working with ayahuasca.
And how long were you there?
I was just there a week. And it's funny because...
And lifetimes, right? It's like a week and, I don't know, 7 lifetimes.
Basically. And I was managing this band at a time and I was scheduling us out. And the only time that we could go to Peru was in between two gigs. And we actually had to arrive a day late and leave a half day early. And so I say very like half jokingly, but very realistically, I did ayahuasca in between a bar and a brewery.
How did the medicine feel about that?
Oh, she was fine because we honored it. You know, we didn't imbibe alcohol. And when I got back, I remember being on that stage at that brewery and I was in my glory. I was playing like, I was just shining. I was just like loving music, loving life. But then slowly... I was living in Pittsburgh, and slowly over the course of following weeks, you know, they tossed us in a Facebook group together, which was nice, but like there was no post-retreat integration really. And slowly I started to kind of fall back into a lot of patterns and habits. You can't fall completely back, but I didn't have integration. So for me, how it changed my life is that I started to pursue this these medicines more on my own and develop my own sense of integration. So what medicine is present and available around, you know, me and in Pennsylvania at the time was mushrooms. So I took what I learned in doing ceremony in Peru and applied that to my own practice with mushrooms. And after many trials and errors and realizing that I would have these beautiful, profound experiences and everything would make sense and I would just understand how all the relations are in my life and what I'm to do, and then coming down and trying to hold on to the peak experience and then falling into a depression for 3 days following an amazing experience, I realized that I had to shift something. And then I started developing my own integration practices, and my own integration practices revolve very largely around music. So it changed my whole relationship with music as well.
So it'd be really nice to hear As Above, So Below, and before, maybe we could even play it now and maybe even talk about, is there an aspect of this song that you'd like to play in particular, or is there anything else you want to tell us about the song?
Thank you. The song stayed a cappella for quite some time, and I shared it, you know, as it felt natural to share. But my biggest integration instrument has been the handpan. You know, and I'd always been a lyricist, and I always expressed myself through words, but this was an opportunity for me to express myself without words. Every time I would have a deep medicine journey, I would sit with my handpan afterward that night and just express. So I have many, many, many integration pieces. And then eventually I realized that As Above, So Below, it needed some extra music. So I tuned into that and I created a handpan accompaniment for the melody that I had created. And so I started singing. That was the first time I sang with the handpan. I was lucky enough to be able to record it in Boulder while I was living in Pennsylvania. And I worked with some really beautiful musicians. I worked with Dango Rose of Elephant Revival and Evan Reeves. They produced my album and they brought in strings, especially for the handpan music. So this particular recording features double bass, cello, and violin. And I will also say, when I got my handpan, I got it as a 432 hertz instrument. Many of you probably heard about 432 hertz. I don't preach the gospel of 432 hertz, but I was experimenting with it. You know, my conclusion is that all frequencies are sacred. It's really the relative relationship of the frequencies that are sacred. But mathematically, yes, and there is a warmer tone to 432 hertz. So we recorded this, it turned out really beautifully. And I think what we're going to do is have a clip playing now, and then at the end, maybe we can do the whole song.
I think that's what we'll do, yeah. I love that part about the handpan. Just this past year, had an experience with 5-MeO-DMT, and it's reminding me of what you're saying, because I had this just unbelievable experience. And as I came back, right when I'm coming back and I open my eyes and I see trees and they look a little different, and I started to put words. I started to say, oh, it's all love. And it was like, mm-mm, no words, just feel. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll try that. And I just laid there noticing, number one, how often we put words to things, but how beautiful it was to not, to actually just experience the sensations, the knowings, the other dimension as I'm transitioning back without words. And I can imagine someone was sitting there playing a song to me, and that was so beautiful, just to be in frequency of music. So I think that's such a beautiful way to integrate a journey by just playing. Did you find when you did that, the next days after a journey, you didn't go into kind of a depression? And did that have an effect on your integration?
Yeah, absolutely. It gave me something to expand upon, because very rarely would I complete the song the night of the ceremony. It was like over the course of the next, what I had found that was that in the course of the days following, that was when I was ripe to really complete at least like the general structure and melodies and flow of the song. So it gave me something to look forward to. And without using those words, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would just be playing and then all of a sudden I'd be crying, just remembering. And I do that often too with facilitation, with my own, you know, integration. I create journey playlists, very, very beautiful journey playlists. I've collected amazing music over the course of several years. And one of the most important things that I've done myself and I've given to my clients is like, here's the playlist. Like, use this in your daily practice. Listen to it again and again in the following weeks. And it works really well if you're creating. So I encourage people, if you're artistic, draw. But my integration practice it stemmed around music, and it developed and helped me maintain what I had learned, very, very much so.
Let's give a little clip of this song to the audience here. That'd be so nice. So we're listening to As Above, So Below.
Walls become your windows, windows now are doors. Doors will lose their hinges and fall to the floor. Floor becomes the earth, life begins to grow. Roots are all connected, as above, so
on the Psychedelic Mom, one of the things that I'm exploring is, as I said, psychedelics meaning soul revealing. So everything that reveals our soul. And I know, having done my own work, that one of the things that often comes up in medicine journeys is our lineage, is our history. And we're looking at, on the Psychedelic Mom, to examine kind of our cultural, familial, political, social, music, whatever it is, systems, and ask, was that soul revealing to me? Did my childhood or what I'm doing in my life, my career, does it reveal my soul? Or does it in ways actually ask me to conceal the truth of who I am? So I'm curious, in your work with medicine and doing this deep work, you mentioned your shadow, that you started to dive into your shadow. And I'm curious, what was revealed to you about the work that you needed to do in regards to your shadow? And was it generational, familial? And what did that reveal to you about the truth of who you are and your lineage?
Wow, what an amazing question. Do we have 3 hours? the concise version is 100%. I've done a lot of shadow work. I typically naturally very much go there. Astrologically, I have three very strong aspects of Scorpio. I'm a Scorpio moon, Mercury, and Venus. So my internal world is pretty actually intense and very investigative. And so shadow work comes really naturally to me. And I had been doing it for quite some time. And what I had realized through, you know, the medicine work, and as I just mentioned about like seeing your shadow in the brightest of light, where I had gotten to was how to honor the shadow, was how to acknowledge the shadow.
And I just want to pause here for a second for someone who doesn't even know what shadow work is, because you just mentioned that you were someone who kind of always did that. You always had this aspect of yourself that leaned into the shadow. I was the complete opposite. I was fully leaned into the light at all times. How would you define shadow and shadow work?
The word work really kind of means just internal investigation. And what we're doing is internally investigating that which is unconscious, that which is lying, I wouldn't say dormant because it has an effect on us, but is lying kind of maybe, you know, in the folds of our consciousness, and not something that we are regularly expressing consciously, but that has a very a large gravitational pull on our consciousness to a certain degree. So for example, we talk a lot about traumas in this field. If there's a childhood trauma that occurred and that trauma was significant enough to be repressed and pushed down, that particular incident was there. But what stems from that incident is a myriad of ways in which it manifests in our day-to-day and in our internal environment. And a lot of that can be unconscious. So shadow work is digging deep into the parts of ourself that we're really not sharing into the light, the parts of us that we're keeping inside, and doing a lot of work to transmute that.
How about yours?
Let me reveal all of my shadows to you. For me, what I had found was, and, you know, and I'm a Libra sun and I'm a Capricorn rising. So my outward facing persona, and I always take astrology with a grain of salt, but it's a very amazing tool. My outward facing persona was always very, very diplomatic, balanced, communicative, and structured. So for me, when people would find out I've been dealing with depression, they'd be like, "You? Really? Like, how could you? You're one of the happiest people I know." And you know what? It was the same with my mother. And it was really, really a heart-wrenching experience to witness my mother be around other people and bring immense joy to everyone she would come in contact with. And be the entertainer and make everyone laugh and then come home. And not all the time, but there were moments where it would be like a switch was flipped. And it was like, what happened? Like, how are you now in this state where you're depressed? You're verbally beating yourself up out loud. I can't imagine what's happening internally. And your coping mechanisms are things like prescription medication and alcohol. And it was so very challenging for me to see that within my mother. But her and I were very close and very connected. And as I got older, I began to see that within myself.
And so your mom had learned a way to mask what was true for her, because outwardly there was this joyful, amazing, caretaking personality that made everybody feel good. But she learned how, in some ways, to mask what was true for her, to mask what was actually her truth in the moments and just put on a show. So where did that leave you in your kind of adaptive strategies? And
luckily I had the outlet of music. In my adolescence, I realized that lyrics were that which connected me to something deeper. I turned to lyrics, I turned to music, I turned to expressing myself through that. And, you know, I definitely fell into a lot of the alcohol traps, a lot of cannabis, and I use cannabis to be creative, mostly. My shadow work at that time was naturally transmuted through my music. If you listen to a lot of my early music, which I probably won't share, but it's like very moody and very, but I had enough of a consciousness to know that the song, it was like I would lead my listeners into the shadow and then I would lead them into the light by the end of the song. I had enough consciousness to know that it's not all about shadow work. There is this arc that comes back up into the light. Speaking of my mother, like over the years, she would confide in me with a lot. I have a brother and they had, you know, a relationship, but my relationship with my mother was more on this deeper level. We talked a lot about some esoteric things, like she was all into psychics and ghost hunting and all this stuff, which is my initial like investigation into consciousness, really. And then when I became opened up to earth medicines, ayahuasca, with DMT, particularly though with psilocybin, which I now call my ally, what it allowed me to do. I say when we have these, like, you know, the prescription drugs, all these things that are prescribed to us in our society allow us to kind of like take what is bothering us, take our shadows and just like push them off to the peripheral so that we can't really see them, and give us a tunnel vision to focus so that we can be a productive member of society. And sure, that works for some people who need that. But what earth medicines do is they take all of that shadow and all of that, and they put it right in front of your face. And all you can do is stare at it until you are kind of pushed into dealing with it and pushed into seeing the bigger picture of it. And then really working to, I use the word transmute a lot. I think this is alchemical work that we are doing. So in my journey with that, and basically realizing a lot of my own limitations, my own shadows, I would look at my mother and would be like, man, these could really, really help her. And like anything, when you're new to something, like when you have a beautiful, amazing opening breakthrough experience, you want to share it with people. You want to evangelize it. And
I was a little like that.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot like that right when I started doing earth medicines, and I was trying to evangelize my kids. Like, you've got to do this. And my mother, actually, my mother was very interested as well. So did you eventually invite your mother or convince your mother to do an earth medicine?
I realize in retrospect, it was more of that, like, you should try this, you know, the you language, not the, hey, I've experienced amazing things from this. It's like, I think you should try this because it would help you out with your anxiety and your depression and your traumas and all this. And it wasn't the way to go about it. I had talked with her for several years about this, and every time her response was the same. No, I'm too afraid. And so I honored that, and I still kept coming around and kept, you know, nudging, but nothing would really, really budge. And then I want to tell this story. So I want to go back a little bit and then come back to this point to give some context. My mom was one of those people who is just so super tapped in, but doesn't fully know it. So intuitive, but just is kind of like nonchalant about it. And so in my early mid-20s, she gifted me a book. And I have it here for anyone who's watching, but this is the book she gifted me. And she gave me Be Here Now by Ram Dass. And she presented it to me as, I was in this bookstore and I saw this book and I opened it up and I flipped through the pages and I knew that it was for you. I knew that it was for you. And so she gave it to me and she wrote, "To Jeremy from Mom, I hope you love this book as much as I do," which is funny because I don't think she ever read it. "This book reminds me of the journey you are on. I hope it gives you peace. I love you, Mom." So yeah, she...
Wow. And for anybody that doesn't know, Ram Dass was someone who was always open, even prior to the psychedelic renaissance, about his psychedelic use and the profound effects they had on his life. And he became a real, incredible, inspiring teacher for many. I always quote Ram Dass saying, "We're all just walking each other home." And that's one of my favorite quotes. He had such a humility about the way he taught. So here your mother is giving you this book and talking about the journey that you're probably going to head on, and she doesn't even know what she's talking about.
Exactly. And her higher self does, though. I know that now. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I was kind of just like, oh, this is kind of cool, but it stayed on my shelf for a while. And then when I had my experience with DMT, and when I started with mushrooms, and when I was preparing to go to Peru, I opened this book and I started reading it and I started getting into it, and I took it with me to Peru, and it became incredibly activated on that trip. And then it became kind of like my, I don't want to say my Bible, my hippie Bible, which is, I sometimes refer to it as, but it became a resource for me for deep, deep spirit, because it's not an easy book. It's not a fun read. It's a, oh, damn. It's profound. And it's also really interesting because if you read his story, his initial experience with meeting his guru and his first like soul cracking, heart opening experience without medicine in regard to his guru had exactly a specific experience to do with his mother. Ram Dass tells that story better than I can. I'll tell the story of mine. And so she gave this book to me and it became my anchor. And then I started listening to Ram Dass and just, he became my spiritual guide. I've listened to almost all of his lectures, I would say. So now fast forwarding to 2018. And this is after probably 3 years of me talking about my experience, encouraging. This is now probably 3 or 4 years after I'd worked with these medicines more extensively. I'm now at my family cottage, which is where I've done a lot of my own work in this regard on my own. And my brother happened to be in town from Phoenix, and we were all together as a family. And this was June 8th, 2018. And we had a beautiful day. It was amazing. And I had to go back to Pittsburgh that mid-afternoon because I had taken my very first music medicine gig. Like, my music had shifted. I had got offered this gig by another sound healer, and she invited me on to collaborate with her. And I was like a full yes, and I was excited about it. But I had to leave my family. And so I needed to go around like 4 o'clock. And my dad, who's a great guy, he's always so hospitable. He's like, oh, Jeremy, you know, you gotta eat something before you go. So let me grill up some portobellas for you, because I'd like stopped eating meat. That's the other thing that shifted for me. My diet completely changed after working with these medicines in ayahuasca. So he did. And I'm sitting there on the picnic table, and my mom is sitting across from me, cat a corner from me. And I'm digging into these grilled portobellas, and she looks across the table and she goes, Jeremy, I want to try mushrooms. And I like look down at my plate and look up at her, and I'm like, wait, like mushrooms? Like, yeah, like, wait, like
mine, like the portobellas?
Mushrooms? And she looks at me in the eye with the most peaceful look I may have ever seen her. And she goes, I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think I'm ready. And I was like, yes, like,
right,
oh my gosh,
right,
this
exactly.
is amazing. We'll come here. Like, we'll start on like a low dose. Like, it's going to be amazing. Like, I'm here for you. It's going to be great. And within 20, 30 minutes, I'm in the kitchen and I'm saying goodbye to her, and I hug her and I tell her I love her. I actually told her I love her twice, and like got in the car and drove to Pittsburgh. And so the story goes is that was on Friday. On Sunday, I was hanging with my brother and kind of his wife, and they were going to the airport, and I was spending the last day with them. And there was this arts festival going on. I had planned to call my mother that day to invite her next weekend, the following weekend, which happened to be Father's Day, which my brother and his siblings were going on this trip together, and actually my mom would have the weekend. And I was going to call her on Sunday and invite her to have a little mushroom ceremony with me 1 week from then. And one thing led to the next, and I got caught up with my brother and got distracted by the arts festival. And then I had another gig that night. So after this gig, I had had plans, and very synchronistically, this person reached out to me, who's a soul brother of mine, a fellow musician. He had reached out to me about playing music, and I had facilitated a little mushroom hike for him. And during that hike, he asked me about the book Be Here Now. And he's like, is this the type of book that like people just gift to you? Like, my brother, it was gifted to him. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of how it works. So in that moment, like following that, I had ordered a book for him, and it had been sitting in my room for weeks, maybe even more. And so that night, Sunday, I went home after this gig. It was like 9:30 at night, and I open up the book of Be Here Now for him. I opened up the cover. I write in it an inscription, just like my mom wrote, but for him. And on the top of it, I wrote her favorite quote. And my mom's favorite quote was, this too shall pass. And I wrote him this inscription, and I talked about the 108 pages, and I talked about the significance of 108 in my life and how I relate to that, and closed the book, got in my car, drove to his house, walked in the door, and it was just after 10 o'clock at night. And I walk in, I conceal the book in my sweatshirt. I'm holding it. I say hi to his wife. He comes out of the kitchen. I put my sweatshirt down. I give him a hug. I'm doing the greeting thing, and I'm minutes away from pulling up this book and being like, here's this gift for you, when my phone rings. And it's my dad. And it's late. And I'm like, excuse me one second, I have to take this. And I answer my phone, and it's my dad. And he goes, Jeremy, say, like, Jeremy, I don't know. I don't know how to say this. But mom passed away tonight. The first thing out of my mouth was no. And then I took a breath, and it was like, it was just like a psychedelic journey where it's like, I zoomed way out. I was looking at the situation I was in. I'm about to gift Be Here Now to one of my best friends, the book that she gave me. And instantly I got this like overwhelming sense of it's going to be okay. And that's what I told him. That was the next thing out of my mouth was, it's going to be okay. It was so wild. I could talk well into the evening about her transition and all the synchronicities. But in that moment, looking back, I realized she got to look me in the eye and tell me she was ready for her journey. And so to me, that's her blessing. Like that was her way of saying, go and do this work. And it's really bittersweet because I never had a chance to work with her. I never had a chance to do the ceremony with her that could have potentially changed her diet, which would have potentially saved her, right? But I can't think that way.
I did not know that your mom died. I did not know that. I am so sorry. This is such a profound story. And have her look you in the eye and say, I'm ready. There's a part of me that wonders, like, what was she ready for? It sounds like, you know, when we think of the mushroom journey and medicine and the surrender that it takes and the letting go into consciousness, it's just interesting that one of the last things your mom said to you is that she was ready. And in some ways, a welcoming of another realm to inspire and change her. And she certainly took another journey.
Mm-hmm. It was incredibly profound. And she's a strong spirit. She came through in a multitude of ways, especially in the following days, which I'll save those stories for other times. But it left me with a sense of deeper purpose, because if I can help, you know, just one other person, and not to force and not to evangelize, just a resonant individual that is ready for their journey with these earth medicines, then it's worth it. And I know she's with me, and I feel her with me, and I feel her with me deeply in the medicine space.
Wow. And I remember talking to you when we were working on the music, and you were actually expressing that in your... As a psychedelic integration specialist, you actually work with a lot of moms. So that's kind of interesting to me. And I'm curious about your work and how your mother and how motherhood and psychedelics have inspired what you do and your psychedelic integration work.
I was actually just thinking about them. There's these two mothers in particular that I've been working with for a number of years, and I've gotten to witness not only their growth, not only their disintegration processes and their hero's journey, their phoenix rising processes, but also how they carry that into their parenting and how they bring that into their presence, their communication with their children, and the experiences that they provide their children, which are all, there's so much of the time, it's very nature oriented. It's really, really beautiful to see. And I will say these two mothers were already doing that to a large degree. They homeschool their children, so they spend a lot of time in cultivating cultivating that. And it's always been kind of nature centric, but everything has like really amped up. And one of my favorite things to receive from this work is someone looking at me and saying, I am now a better mother from doing this. I'm now a more present father because of this work that I do. And that is so important for me because I worked with children for 11 years teaching music. I know firsthand the power of influence that we have upon our children, and we dumb it down for them all. It's so oftentimes we don't speak truth to them. And for me, this allows parents to be more real with their children and to be more authentic.
Yeah, I think as parents, as a mother, maybe even a little bit more than fathers, I'm not really sure. I think in particular in my generation, we were kind of taught to mask like your mother did, mask everything. Everything's always so wonderful. And to hide kind of the deeper things that were going on in a house. And I think one of the things that certainly psychedelics teach you is that truth is so important. And children can feel the energy, regardless of whether you can be saying everything's fine and have a smile on your face, but kids feel it. And I'm just going back to your experience with your mother. If you could almost take what you've learned from medicine and what you've learned from working with women and fathers, what would you have thought would have been the healthiest way for your mom to handle her depression when you were younger? What did you need to hear?
My mother would actually be somewhat transparent about what she was going on and communicate. And like I said, I kind of became her confidant, but it came from a place of victimhood. It came from this frequency of victim that we all know and feel. And when I was a little kid, that frequency of victimhood was palpable and it attached to me and it became a part of my experience and my consciousness. And what I would have loved to hear from my mother was that she, deep down, loved herself amidst all the trauma, all of the things that happened to her, all of the things she was ashamed about that really just stemmed from something that wasn't her fault. And because for me, the most confusing thing was, how can someone who has such a big heart and loves so much not be able to love themselves? And that is a guiding principle of my coaching. And that is a guiding principle of this work with the medicine, is to have a goal of self-love. And I have a whole step, kind of, as I know it's not step-by-step to self-love, but there are certain things to focus on prior to. You can't just jump right in all the time. But I would have wished that for her to be able to communicate with me her truth from a more neutral place, less victimhood, and also just remind me that, you know, she does know her worth.
And I think what you're talking about too, like I always think that self-love is the highest spiritual principle, really, because if we don't love ourselves and we don't love from that place, we love from all the parts. We love from the victimhood part, the scared part, the anxiety part. And in a lot of ways, that creates very insecure attachment to our children. Yeah, I would love to hear a little bit about your work and what your process is with everybody you work with. What is your approach to psychedelic integration?
Sure, I would love to share. You must excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, so I'm a little congested. I will say that I was actually trained by a guest on your podcast. I was trained by Shri Malcolm Gaddisai. I'm certified through her program. And gained a lot of clarity in that journey as well. And what I really came down to is we were kind of like refining our offerings, really this approach that I use as like the framework for my coaching. And so when people come to me for any type of coaching or facilitation work, one of the guiding principles in general is creating the masculine container for them, creating the safety, creating the masculine container so that the feminine can flow within it. And not that this work is all feminine, but there's something about the surrender, the chaos, the flow that is really important and creating that masculine structure while still being able to step into the feminine is really key for me. And when it comes to coaching itself, essentially the process that I guide people through over a period of time is, you know, the first thing that we do is we become aware. We become aware of everything. I say it's like we take inventory. We take inventory of our life. We're looking at everything that currently is, everything has happened in the past, all of our traumas, all of our conditions, all of our relations, even our ancestry, if we want to go deeper with it. And we look at that, and then we begin to acknowledge it. We're simply acknowledging it. This is the reality. This is my reality. There's nothing that I can really do to change this. I'm acknowledging what is in this moment. That's essentially step one. So taking inventory with clients, getting to know them, getting to know their truth. And then from there, we kind of step toward acceptance. And this is often the hardest step for people, because to accept everything as it is, it's easy to say that. It's easy to be like, oh yeah, well, there's nothing you can do to change anything that's happened to you, to change anything in the past. Why don't you just accept it? But there's a lot of really deep work in finding this acceptance after we've done inventory and acknowledged it. And that's a lot of the work that comes through the medicine. The acceptance is something that the medicine is really able to show us viscerally and experientially of, you know, how everything, all I get that I've gotten this many, many times, and I've had people say this. It's like, I have this moment of realization that every single thing, the good, the bad, the in-between has led to this exact moment. That's the acceptance. That's the pivot point. That's the zero point. That's the neutrality from which there we can pivot towards self-love. And this has developed as to where this final principle now has a feminine and a masculine aspect to it. And the feminine aspect is self-love. And the masculine aspect is aligned action. So holding those two both, and they interweave, they feed upon each other. But for me, self-love is the most important, because from self-love, we take aligned action. And that is really what I help clients get to. And then if you imagine this as like the two bottom points of a triangle, the top point of the triangle is a guiding force of nature. So nature is always our guide. Being in nature, communing with nature, the cycles of the earth, the cycles of the moon, all of this is our guiding force. So that's kind of my kind of coaching philosophy and what I help guide people through in conjunction with medicine work.
It's a beautiful process. It's so interesting to hear your process that you take people through. And having gone through that process myself and having my own process of working with clients in that space between taking the medicine, sitting with what's real, what's true, in an acknowledgement of it all, to that place of acceptance. It's so interesting how, in my own experience, how many emotions that I actually had to go through to that place of like, it's all good. It was as if I had to dredge up every emotion never felt, never expressed, yes, to get to that place of,
yes,
full acceptance. And, you know, it's interesting when you think about it, all those patterns that we have, protector parts, they have been working so hard to protect us from feeling those very things. So I love that idea, too, of the masculine containment so the feminine can flow. And in particular, in these times, because I think obviously there's so much talk about both the toxic masculine and the toxic feminine that play out in the world. And so when we can be in relationship, feminine, masculine, but we all have the feminine, masculine within ourselves. And I think that big balancing of what you just said, the love of self and aligned to action. But to be a man in this space, to be holding space in such a beautiful way, is so important in these times. Many women that I know talk about how few men there really are, even though this is a conscious community, how few men there are they would actually truly want to work with. So I think it's beautiful that you're doing this work from such a place of integrity. Your relationship with your mother probably impacts this work deeply.
Yeah, thank you for reflecting that, for witnessing that. There's so much right now. And aside from the dynamic of feeling like permission has been granted for ancient wisdom to return, and the feminine is rising, we feel that, we see that. And I think one of the most important things is for men to see that, to acknowledge that, to accept that, and to love that, and to really embody that, embrace it in their own beings, and also support the women that are just like, it's their time. And I feel like there's a beautiful balancing act that is kind of starting to lock into place, or maybe a harmonization act, is because there's multiple things that are involved. And for me, it comes more naturally than I think a lot of men. I've always been very in tune with my feminine, but I've also been really on a path in the last couple of years of developing the feminine, developing the masculine. It's not just as simple as being in tune with it. It's like, oh, you can be really in touch with an immature feminine. You can be really in touch with, one of my clients said, a fractured masculine. Can be really in touch with that, but it's working to develop that into the ultimate expression, which is, you know, the divine and sacred masculine and feminine. I feel it. It's happening.
Well, thanks for your work in bringing that about in yourself and in your clients and in the world.
You're so very welcome. It's my honor, my pleasure.
Appreciate that. Yeah. I want to know if there's anything else that you'd like to share about your work.
Yeah, I would. One of the main things that I haven't mentioned yet is that I release music as a different name than my own. And I also do integration work through this same name. When I was in the process of creating this album and stepping into my own kind of solo album, conscious music journey, I didn't want it to be called Jeremy Colbert, releases that. I wanted it to feel beyond me. I didn't want people to listen to my music and think, who is this guy? As you do, as one does when they listen to an artist, I wanted them to just be very focused on the music. And I wanted the music to be more than just me. And so I meditated for a couple of weeks when I needed to submit this album. And finally, it came to me very synchronistically that the name that I would release music as is Taragape. And Taragape is a name that I'm still being rebirthed into over and over again, stepping more into. But Tara is Sanskrit for star, but it's also the Hindu and Buddhist goddess of compassion. And there are many forms of Tara. And then agape is one of many words that the Greeks use to describe different aspects of love. And this particular aspect of love is universal love, brotherly love, love of all. So it's a big thing to live up to, but it's essentially cosmic, compassionate, universal love.
I wish I had the Sanskrit word for infinitely beautiful. Oh, wow.
Thank you. And so you can also find me as Taragape, like if you find me on Instagram and YouTube. And for those of you watching, the symbol has been right behind me. This is the symbol of Taragape. And you can find that on my album. The background symbol is a sacred geometric thing called a Pythagorean lute, which is a five-pointed star that is fractal in both directions. And that came to me during ayahuasca. I had never seen this before in my entire life. And that came to me like four times, flashing across my vision. It lines perfectly up with the caduceus, which is the symbol that we commonly refer to as the Western medical symbol, which was falsely used in 1903 by the U.S. Army Corps. It's supposed to be the rod of Asclepius, which is a single snake that doesn't even have wings. But they used this symbol, which is a hermetic symbol, that it's the two snakes that intertwine and come up, and there are wings at the top of the staff. and it represents spiritual awakening, Kundalini awakening, and among other things. However, it's very actually interesting that in ancient times, it was also a symbol of commerce. So now we use a symbol of commerce for our Western medical symbol, which is perfectly ironic.
It really is, isn't it?
But that's a side tangent. You can find me there. I release music as Taragape. I do my coaching practice as Taragape. I'm really looking forward to this year, stepping more and more into this work. I do host retreats.
And what medicines are you facilitating?
I've only been working with psilocybin. But yeah, psilocybin is my ally. It's a beautiful medicine. And I encourage people to tune into whatever frequency, you know, they are resonant with, because we all have different resonant frequencies with different medicines.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it can change.
Oh, yes. It can change and shift, and they can complement each other. And sometimes they fight a little bit.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, it was so good to see you. And I'm so grateful that you came on and shared so much of your heart and your soul and your music. We're going to end this episode with playing the full version of As Above, So Below. And I'm going to put all the information about where to reach you in the show notes. So if anybody wants to reach out and do psychedelic integration work or getting medicine work done, they could reach out to you.
All my best with the podcast in this year, 2023. Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's show and want to help build a more beautiful, conscious, and loving world, please share this content with friends, family, and colleagues. You can follow this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use, and I'd really appreciate you taking the time to write a review so that others can find these amazing conversations. And if you'd like to see a video version of the show, you can find me on YouTube. Feel free to reach out and connect with me at thepsychedelicmom.com or message me on Instagram at thepsychedelicmom. And remember, you are the medicine.